Wir Bandu an die Bagino, Namo Buddhai, Jai Bhim. So, I hope you've all done your homework. Some of you weren't here yesterday, and I gave everybody homework to do. And you know the first thing the teacher does when the class begins is collect in the homework. Well, I can't do that. And anyway, I'm not the teacher. But I wonder what you found. What they found. Did you manage to watch your mind? Yes? Yeah? At least a little bit. You managed to watch your mind. Remember to watch your mind.
Yeah?
It's quite hard, isn't it?
Yeah?
It's quite hard to remember to watch. You just get carried away with life. Zindagi mushkil hai. It's so difficult. Things happen. And you just get lost in the events of the day. And you forget to watch the most important thing of all, which is your own mind. But I hope that some of you did manage to keep track of your mind. I'm going to ask you to do this again tonight, so remember what I'm saying. If you just find there are points during your day when you stop and look at your mind, that will help you. When you take a cup of tea, for instance. Put down the newspaper. Stop the... Is it good bud?
Bud.
Stop the gossip. And just, what is my mind like now? Just while you've got the cup of tea in your hand, just think, what is my mind like now? When you finish one activity, before you start another, stop, what is my mind like? You make one chapati. I can't remember how you do it. I've done it once. It didn't look like a chapati, but I did make one. Well, you make one chapati, stop. What's my mind like? You do your job in the middle of your work. What's my mind like? Whatever you're doing, find points when you stop and look. If you can train yourself like this, you'll really make big changes in your mind. Train yourself to watch your mind. What's your mind like now? We're all here, we've all got minds, huh? I didn't check. Everybody brought their mind, did they? Yeah? What's it like now? Is it bright? Or is it a bit dull? Is it steady? Or is it wavering? Is it happy? Is it sad? So just see what it's like. Is it expanded? Is it focused? So just see what your mind is like right now. So this activity that we're engaged in now is exactly what the Buddha himself did. You know that we don't really know so very much about what the Buddha's life was like before he gained enlightenment. We have all those stories about, you know, the three sights and so on. But those are not actually in the Pali Canon. But what the Buddha does say about his early life is very interesting indeed. So he says, for instance, that before he became the Buddha, when he was still a Bodhisattva, he began to reflect on the mind. He did what we're doing now. This is in a sutta in Majjhima Nikaya called the Vitakka Sutta. The sutta of the two kinds of thought. So he thought, let me watch my mind. And let me divide the thoughts in my mind into two heaps. This is what the Buddha did, just what we can do now. He said, let me put on one side thoughts that are connected with craving. Thoughts connected with hatred. And thoughts connected with cruelty. So let me put those thoughts on one side. Let me put on the other side the opposite. Non-craving is renunciation, contentment. Non-hatred is Maitri. Non-cruelty is, Ahimsa or Karuna. So I said, let me divide my thoughts into these two different categories. So he watched his thoughts. And he saw, well, is this thought in this category or in that category? And then he thought, let me see the consequences of each kind of thought. If I have thoughts of craving, how does that work out? Does it make me happy? Does it make other people happy? Does it make both me and other people happy? Does it mean that people will think well of me? Well, of course he thought, well, no, if I'm full of craving, if I'm a lobhi, if I'm greedy, it leads to my unhappiness. If I'm full of craving, it's already a state of unhappiness. You can see something you want. And you just sort of wanting it, huh? So you feel unhappy because you haven't got it. So it's an unhappy state of mind. And then, of course, when you're craving, you start to do things that harm others. You steal. You take what is not yours. You take more than you need. So you cause harm to others. You know, so many people in the world are starving. But I've even seen in my own country how much food is thrown away. Every day, enough food probably to feed many people who are starving is just thrown away. So our craving leads to other people's suffering. You see it in India, don't you? So many people, so rich. And so many people, so poor. If just some of those who had too much gave to those who had too little, maybe we could get rid of hunger. So the Buddha said, craving leads to my unhappiness. And it causes harm to others. Well, we hardly need to say anything about hatred. If your mind is full of hatred, are you happy? Well, of course you're not. You feel very, very upset, very, very threatened. And until that person is harmed, you feel you're not safe. And then if you act on that hatred, of course you cause harm. And then cruelty, a very, very unpleasant state of mind, isn't it? It's where you get pleasure out of hurting others. I saw on the news today that there was a case just yesterday in India. Somebody tortured a dog and filmed himself doing it. And then he put it on YouTube. And well, fortunately the police saw it and he's been arrested and charged with cruelty. But sometimes, you know, to see other people suffer gives us some strange pleasure. But it's not a happy state of mind. Very bitter, very twisted state of mind. And of course it causes great harm to others. So the Buddha said, when I see this kind of thought, I don't want it. I let go of it. I drop it. So he sees what kind of thought he's got, considers the consequence. When he sees the consequence, he gets rid of it. Then, of course, the other kind of thought is the opposite. If you're contented, well, you're contented. You feel so good, so happy. I've got everything I want. You walk through the bazaar and you think, no, I don't want any of that. you see a sari shop, you say, no, I don't want them. You see all the latest mobile phones, you say, no, I don't need. But you feel quite happy. So, yes, he said, this state of contentment is obviously very desirable. Then you see Maitri. But do you feel good when you feel Maitri? I don't even need to ask.
Huh?
Your own mind is full of happiness. And other people are glad to see you. You know, if they see you with a smiling face, they feel a little bit happier themselves. You can change somebody's day just by smiling. And of course, if you're full of karuna, well, that's very pleasant for you, very good for you and good for others. So the Buddha said, this is what he engaged in. He trained himself to have the skillful kinds of thought. He said he just spent days and days and days training himself like this. So brothers and sisters, that's what we should be doing. You've started by watching what's going on. That's what your homework was last night. You've been watching your mind. Now, you need to start looking at the two kinds of thought. And just divide your thoughts in that way. Reflect on the consequence of each kind of thought. Very, very simple, isn't it? It's simple, but it's not easy to do. Often the simplest things are actually the most difficult. But I'm giving you the secret of life. I should charge you a lot of money for this. I should be on television with a long grey beard. And a big chair, gadi, yeah? And I should be telling you, I have the secret of life. Shh, don't tell anybody. It's a big secret. No crores of people watching television. Watch your mind. Divide your thoughts into two kinds. These ones and those ones. I should be a telly baba, I think that. There are so many telly babas, but actually it's so simple, isn't it? You've got a mind, you know what to do with it. You don't need any Kropati Baba to tell you. So this is the secret of happiness. It really is. Because happiness comes from the mind. The kinds of thought you have now create a happy or an unhappy mind in the future. There you are, I've told you everything you need to know for the rest of your life. Bas, namo buddhaya, jai bhim, amen. actually, it's not quite that simple. There must be more because I've got to talk for another 40 minutes. But what I've given you so far is at least enough to be working with. But the problem is, it's very difficult to keep this up. You try, you remember for a little while. Then you forget. And then the bad kind, the unskillful kinds of thought take over. There's something deeper down that you need to work with. So brothers and sisters, we're going to go down a bit. You know, put on your diving mask. You know, your oxygen tubes on your back. We're going to go down into the mind. I imagine that some of you will already have experienced this over the last days. As you've been watching your mind, you've begun to realize something of its complexity. So for instance, you're sitting down doing nothing in particular. Just a cup of tea, maybe. Lots and lots of sugar in it. Was it 4 spoonfuls? I've seen it. And you're just not thinking of anything particular. And then your mind starts to throw up various images, various thoughts, various feelings. They just come up. You don't have them, they have you. I've just done a very good retreat at Bhaja Retreat Center. We were doing a lot of meditation. But most of our meditation was with no practice. We were just sitting. But we were just sitting there, not doing anything at all. And it's so strange where your mind goes. There you are, sitting in Bhaja in the monsoon. Then suddenly I'm back in England. Or I'm a Bodhgaya. Or I'm coming to the Mahavihara. Just suddenly, like that. I don't know why. I wasn't thinking about England before that. Up it comes. Or I remember what he said to me last week. Suddenly I remember his words. I begin to feel angry. So the mind just constantly throwing things up. It's like the sea, just the waves of the sea being whipped up by the wind. These deep currents under the surface of the sea. And your mind is like a little cork on the surface of the water, a little bottle on the surface of the water. It's washed this way, washed that way, washed that way. But not under your control. This is the mind, isn't it? It's swirling and churning. So it's important that we try to understand the nature of this mind a bit more clearly. We've done some basic mind watching. We're trying to see what state the mind is in. What its sort of health is. Huh? Health. Health. Whether your mind is in good condition or bad condition. Whether your mind is tired or fat or whatever. Out of condition. We've been looking at what condition your mind is in. And we've been looking to see what kinds of thought are in your mind. Now we're going to try to look down inside the mind. But this is a very bold thing for me to do in this situation. Deep sea diving. And you know that when you go deep down into the ocean, you need to be careful that the pressure doesn't become too much. So let's start at the top. Right now, all of us are aware of a sensory world around us. Huh? You can see shapes, you can see colours. Huh? You can see, hear sounds. Huh? You can feel the wind on your body. You can feel the ground underneath you. Maybe you can smell a little bit of incense. Huh? So that's the very surface of the mind. Huh? All this sensory information coming through the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body. And of course the mind itself is also providing information. So I'm talking to you. I'm trying to give you a connected talk. So my mind is aware of what I've said before. I'm keeping hold of the thread of what I'm saying. And you're doing the same, I hope. You're seeing the thread of what I'm saying. So that's the surface of the mind. And that's fairly simple, isn't it? The mind is an organism for collecting data. It's gathering the data that our senses give us. And it's organizing it into a pattern. That's this world here. So that, I think everybody knows what I mean. That's fairly straightforward, superficial. But there's something else going on, isn't there? We're usually not so aware of this. There's something organizing our information. Hmm? you could say there's an operating system. I'm not an engineer, Bharti, you will have to correct me if I get this wrong. There's a sort of function underneath that sensory function that's organizing our information. And it's organizing it according to a certain principle. So what is that principle? Me. That's the principle.
Yeah?
It's organizing the information that's coming according to how useful it is to me. Whether it's mine or not mine. Whether it's a threat to me. Can I eat it? Would I look good in it? Will it make me look big? Etc., etc. Wagara wagara. So there's this organizing principle deeper down, which is the principle of I. I'll draw you a diagram. There's the senses. Underneath the senses is I. So I, all the time, is organizing our information in relation to I. If it's useful to me, I begin to want it. If I think it will give me pleasure, I want it. If it's dangerous to me, I want to get rid of it. I live in the middle of a farm in England. And it's a sheep farm. And, English sheep are about twice the size of Indian sheep. And they're very fat, yeah? They have a thick wool because they have to deal with cold weather. In the place where I live, there are fields and there are hundreds and hundreds of sheep there. So I sometimes look out the window and I just watch the sheep. I try to get inside the sheep's mind. It's not very difficult because they don't have a very big mind. You can almost see their mind at work. Can I eat it? Is that my lamb? No, that's not my lamb. Who's that? Is he going to eat me? So in a very simple way, even the sheep is organizing for its organism's survival. We do that in a much more complex and full way. This is very difficult to spot. This mental function of organizing your experience for I is right under the surface. It's so deep that usually we don't notice it. we're going to see tomorrow probably how it comes. Huh? Because it's a constant process. The Buddha called it ahankar. The I maker. So all the time under the surface, there's this drive to find out what is me, what is not me. And this, according to the Buddha, is the source of all our problems. Because we're not aware of this I maker, it constantly gets us into trouble. You might say, well, what's wrong with an I maker? My problem is that you've all got an eye maker too. And my eye maker and your eye maker sooner or later are going to come into conflict. Because the eye maker in me wants to make everything mine. Sometimes it's called the mamanka, the mind maker. And since we've all got that, they come into conflict. This is the basis for the first kinds of thought. So, this function within the mind is below the surface. But you can begin to be a little bit aware of it. You can begin to be aware of it saying mine. Every time you fall into craving, I is there. Every time you fall into hatred, I is there. But it's just a thought. It's just a mental function. It has its origins in our animal nature. But in the end, it becomes a problem for us. It leads us to a constant struggle. It leads us to great unhappiness. And it leads us to cause suffering to others. But this isn't actually the bottom of the mind. Below the eye is another layer. And this is more difficult to describe. Let's call it the ocean. This Mansagar. It's this great ocean of swirling currents. And you can be aware of it, for instance, in dreams. When you wake up in the morning, you remember your dreams. Sometimes they're so strange. Where do they come from? Where do those images arise from? Sometimes completely from another world, it seems. I've been having some very strange dreams recently. I don't know what they're to do with. The other night I dreamt I was having a bath in a large stone coffin. And in the dream, this coffin was a way of being renewed. You got in the coffin, had your bath, and you came out new. Where did that come from? It came from the ocean. Just brought up, churned up. Actually, that's a very interesting dream, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's about death and life. The relationship between death and life. I hadn't thought about that. It's just thrown up in this great churning sea of the mind. And often this sea, this ocean, is wiser than you are. And actually, I is also coming up from the sea. So this sea, this ocean, is in Buddhist tradition sometimes called the Bhavanga. It's something that's constantly becoming. Sometimes it's called a Vijnana Shrota. The stream of mental activity. Under the surface of our minds, this endless flow of mental events. It's full of memories. It's full of images. It's full of thoughts, of feelings. Just swirling, rolling along. Later Buddhist philosophy called it the Alaya Vijnana. What I'm talking about now is an analysis by a school of Buddhism called Vijnanavada. Sometimes Yogacara. And this is the teaching of the great Acharya Asanga. Baba Sahib quotes him in the Buddha and his Dhamma. When he talks about the Bodhisattva Bhumis, he's quoting Asanga. Asanga had a brother, Vasubandhu, who is equally famous. And you remember last time I gave talks, I discussed the last passage in the Buddha and his Dhamma. And that's attributed to Vasubandhu. So the Yogacharins, they looked at the mind more deeply. They looked at what's going on deep down in the mind. They looked at this great swirling, churning flow of mind. And we'll see more clearly what they had to say about this tomorrow. But for the time being, I want you to focus a little bit more on the surface of this. Or rather on the total system, maybe. Right now, all these three levels are present. In each and every one of us, they're all here. The surface level of our awareness of this world. A little bit deeper down is this eye-making. This grasping onto our experience as mine. My body. Not my body. And so on. My talk. I'm so clever. The eye maker is constantly at work. And it's trying to make itself secure. It's trying to take hold of whatever will make it feel firm and solid. It's trying to reject whatever threatens it. That's going on right now for every one of us here. Maybe you've got some idea of it. Usually we don't notice it. We only really get a chance to notice it when we start to react. Just let's imagine that Bharti stops translating. Or she does completely wrong translation. And I can understand enough Marathi to know whether she's on or not. So maybe she starts translating wrongly. Well, I'm going to start feeling irritated. I'm giving such a good talk. I'm trying to impress you all and make you think what a good speaker I am. And this Bharti here, she's spoiling me. So I begin to feel annoyed, huh? So watch it. So I begin to feel annoyed, huh? And then I start making nasty comments about the translator. So I start to react. That's when you notice the eye maker. When everything's okay, you don't notice. Because the eye maker's got everything it wants. Huh? But when reality comes into conflict with I, you feel it. Then you react. So reaction is a very important practice. So, because it gives you a chance to see what's going on. So I'm going to give you another piece of homework. Reaction practice. Now this isn't practice at reacting. You don't need that practice. You can do it very well. We're very good at reacting. But it's learning to use those reactions to notice the eye maker.
Sir,
So Bharti is translating badly. So I start to get annoyed. Then I can see that underneath that reaction is I making. Because I'm attached to the idea of making a big, good impression on you. I'm not really trying to communicate the Dhamma, I'm just trying to communicate how clever I am. And this woman is getting in the way. So the reaction shows that I am attached to my pride. Huh? Every time you get angry, every time you get full of craving, I is involved. Huh? So just look down. Try to see what's at the bottom of it. See what's deeper down in your mind. Because this is what we need to deal with in the end. Yes, it's good to sort out the two kinds of thought. A bit like gardening. Oh, you're all Punewallas, so you don't know farming. But probably you remember your village, huh? Well, any farmer knows that, well, you're trying to grow crops, but what you often grow is weeds. You plant the rice. But then some other plant comes up, huh? And it can choke the rice that you're growing. So you have to go through the field pulling up the weeds. Huh? And that's what we're doing when we're dividing our thoughts into two different kinds. Crops or flowers on the one hand, weeds on the other. You want to grow flowers, you want to grow crops, so you get rid of the weeds. But there's a problem. Every time you pull up a weed, yes, you get rid of it for the time being. But the seed is still there. The roots are still there. I see this in the fields around me in England. In the sheep field, you get a very tough weed called a thistle. It's very tough and it's got just strong spines. Yeah. And the sheep don't like it. They decide it's this kind of thought, not that kind of thought. So the farmer comes every year with his mowing machine and he cuts them down. Just within a few weeks, up they come again. It's the same with the mind. Yes, you divide into two kinds of thought. You choose the skillful thoughts. But the unskillful ones just come back. Because the root is still in the mind. Where is the root? There it is. That's where the root is. That's what we have to get down to. So some of you will already recognize two very important Buddhist categories. The shamatha and vipassana. Shamatha is sorting out the two kinds of thought, encouraging, developing the skillful thoughts. That's through bhavana, through development. And that leads to a very calm, very happy, very stable state of mind. But the roots are still deep in the soil. You have to get down to those roots with vipassana. You have to see the eye maker at work. This is a deeper phase of work. But we need to be doing it now. We can all be practicing this kind of work. Looking deeper down into the mind. Seeing the way in which this strong ahanka is there. It's quite natural, it's quite normal. We've all got it. It's built into us, huh? You could say even it's part of our survival mechanism. That's what we've got to get down to. So your homework today is to try to see this at work. To try to see down into your reactions. And I know there will be plenty of opportunity through the day. You wake up in the morning and there's an opportunity for reaction. You have your breakfast, there's an opportunity for reaction. You've got to get the children off to school. So many opportunities for reaction. So many opportunities all through the day. So every time we react, look down inside the reaction. I've given you some theory. But I'm not merely talking theory. This is the reality of our inner life. It's going on in all of us. And we can retrain ourselves. Once we can see this eye maker, we can let it go. Then we can live at peace with the world. At peace with ourselves, at peace with others. We can live for the benefit of ourselves and the benefit of others. So even if you haven't fully understood what I'm getting at, look down. down at what's going on inside your mind. See if you can see beneath the reaction, this craving, this attachment to self. And tomorrow night we'll begin to look a little bit more at why that happens, how it comes about. But everything I've talked about is entirely practical. This is you. All these three levels are there in you. See if you can see them. Don't strain, don't struggle. Don't fall off your scooter. You know, when you're on your scooter, probably best to watch the road rather than your mind. Although actually you can watch your mind and watch the road very well. But wait, maybe the day after tomorrow. The mic has gone off. Undo the mic. So yes, you need to try to practice in this sort of way. See if you can see this structure in your mind. And of course, continue to try to work with these two kinds of thought in your mind. I've given you a lot to do. And I hope you've got some grasp of what it is. If you can really do this, you'll see immediately some change. If you can really keep an eye on your mind, you'll see some big change in your own mental state. Others will see it too. Your wife will notice, your husband will notice. Because there will be some change in you. So tomorrow night we'll understand a little bit more how this whole system works. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Come back again. Bring your mind. And work with it. Namo Buddhaya. Jai Bhim.